You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Justin Dower. Justin is the author of Cultivating a Creative Culture. The belief behind his book is simple. A happy and well-supported employee is a fueled, charged, inspired creator. Quality of work is elevated, quality of life is strengthened, and the organization's brand becomes organically championed by the very people it supports. Justin graduated from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. With the Joseph Mueller Brockman and user advocacy claiming equal parts of his creative heart, he's crafted digital experiences for clients like Sony, Chase, SRAM, IBM, and the U.S. Department of Energy. Through bloodshot tunnel vision, he's drawn from those career experiences across agency side, client side, design studio, and pure tech to foster healthy, dynamic, supportive creative cultures. Justin, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. It's great to be here.
I feel at least glad after reading that bio that hopefully by recording an audio-only podcast, your bloodshot tunnel vision eyes can enjoy a little bit of rest.
It's funny you mention that because I actually have a three-week-old newborn, so bloodshot eyes is actually quite topical at the moment.
Well, I'm not really on the other end of it. I'm just mid-tunnel. I've got five kids, it's the new normal. So that's why I've since being a parent, I've pretty consistently hidden my eyes behind glasses. So
that's a good approach.
At least adds a layer between me and the outside world that now I've made a part of my personal brand. So bringing it all back to branding.
Nicely done.
So I love the focus of your book, and It's a topic that we talk about here some, but I think we could always stand to talk more about because I think it is a huge missed opportunity for brands. And we focus so much on all of these outside parties that we want to influence, and we forget about those closest to us. And once we arm them, once we turn them into brand ambassadors, they can have such a powerful impact, I think, as you noted, being organically championed by the very people it supports. Right. Why do we miss this so much?
Well, I mean, culture internally is something that seems like the most the most intuitive thing to support, and workers' health and the dynamic energy amongst them generating good work. It seems like a no-brainer that, you know, if you treat people well, they'll produce strong work and be advocates for the brand. But so often the internal processes, you know, that lead to great work, there are some horror stories, of course, you know, that go along with that. People not seeing their families, for days or weeks on end, or, you know, people having to sleep at an office overnight, or people's value within the organization being determined by who the last one out the door is. And, you know, these trails of, you know, this is a metaphor, this trail of bodies along the way that, you know, ultimately leads to good work. You know, that those are the stories kind of behind the scenes. And now, you know, thanks to social media and, you know, people feeling emboldened and empowered to speak in that capacity, you know, those it's less of a behind the scenes, behind the curtains kind of thing now. And it's getting certainly much more attention and focus.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up social media, because I feel like that has at least made it something that we talk about more in the context of brands and brand building. Because I think before, people didn't understand I mean, I think even in the absence of social media, I think your people have tremendous value to how you build your brand. But I think it might be easier to see when we have employees that can be online and can be advocates in maybe a more visible way.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, some businesses, of course, and brands, they have muzzles that they put on employees to say, you know, you can tweet, but anything that is about our internal workings or meetings or the way we produce work, but you cannot speak about those things. And you see people creating anonymous accounts, et cetera, to get the message out. So, you know, it's a series of hoops and hurdles, but you know, people ultimately find a way. If they're not being treated well and supported, I mean, the message does come out these days, and you know, brands and businesses have to be hyper cognizant of that.
Yeah. So where do you start with wanting to not only be cognizant of that, but foster a better culture? I think culture and brand have a lot in common and are both related, but I think there are odd things that kind of transcend the org chart. And yet I think too often end up brands siloed in marketing and culture siloed in HR. And they're both bigger than that. But where do you start?
Well, yeah, you made some great points there. So, I mean, for my part, culture and brand, I mean, you can't extricate one from the other. I mean, they are indistinguishable. I think Denise Leon wrote a great book called Fusion, which effectively it talks about exactly that you can't. I mean, brand and culture are synonymous. So to your point, where does it start? It starts from the top down. If people are not supported from leadership, you know, I mean, it's just not going to happen then. So people, you know, there's an anecdote that people don't leave businesses. They leave managers and they leave leaders. And if culture is not supported and fostered and championed in practice rather than just lip service, then it's just not going to trickle down. So even if, you know, there's a VP or someone C-level, and of course they have, you know, they're responsible for the business at varying levels and stakeholders and the brand outwardly. But inwardly at that point, if they can't, if the VPs and the C-level staff cannot be in the trenches, which of course, you know, they cannot be due to their responsibilities, the people who are in the day-to-day and are in these meetings and are producing the work, they need to feel empowered from the top to champion these things. So policies, you know, is there flex time? Can people work remotely more often? Can they work from a coffee shop? Can they have time to just pause and recharge and refuel? Or, you know, if someone's leaving at 3 o'clock, is someone like tapping their watch and, you know, saying, oh, half day today? You know, those little passive aggressive nods are, you know, directly indicative of the brand and synonymous of the corporate culture. So it seems like a trivial thing at that point, but it's indicative of deeper seated issues.
Well, I mean, I had to laugh just because of what you said about the tapping of the watch, because there's so many of these things that do become lip service. You know, someone goes to a conference and sees an engaging keynote about culture and wants to come back and talk a good game, but it's how you live that day in and day out, and I think that's where many struggle.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So who are your go-to examples of an organization that really gets this?
I could rattle off, you know, dozens, but in terms of the, you know, a few that come to top of mind immediately, Clear Left, if I'm talking about agencies specifically. Clear Left is an agency in Brighton in the UK, and their entire model, or the way they organically recruit, is through their internal culture, the way they treat people, the way leaders empower the very people they hire. It's kind of like a get out of, I'm hiring these brilliant people, get out of their way and let them create. It seems like a simple thing, but that's the way they operate, and people organically flock to that brand. Larger level, non-agency, Shopify does an absolutely bang up job in terms of their culture. And, you know, I've said this in my book and in other podcasts I've been before, when job seekers are seeking out a new role, a new career path, and they're looking at a website, where does culture or our people fall? As simple as the navigation, where is the company prioritizing the way they're outward, you know, and their brand outward facing face, where are they prioritizing their own people? Is that the fifth thing in the navigation? Is it not present at all? You know, if you're looking at a website or a brand and, you know, it's like life at or a day in the life. Is that a section that's blown out and there's copious quotes and, you know, you can tell it, they're ultimately incredibly passionate about it. Or is the about page C-level leadership and no one else is present? So simple things like that, when you're looking at a brand, I think are very clearly indicative of how culture resonates with their outward-facing face. So Shopify does a heck of a job. HubSpot has, I mean, they hang their entire, not their entire, but a large part of their outward-facing brand on culture. They have a document called their culture code that they've updated repeatedly based on, you know, feedback internally. They have a tremendous internal feedback mechanism. It's been viewed, I think, something crazy like 4 million times. I'm not sure how many downloads as well, but that is front and center in their outward-facing communications and the way their CEO talks on Twitter. Everything is through the lens of culture, and these are, you know, large brands, and it's very easy to, on the other side of the coin, to do it wrong. I mean, something in my book I talk about is these things that seem like valuable perks, you know, from a brand, and you read it in a newspaper or in a magazine, and it sounds fantastic, but it's kind of indicative of, you know, brands who put on a good public face, but internally are expecting a whole lot in terms of a human-centered commitment from their employees. So, you know, like some tech firms in the West Coast have like sleep pods, you know, in on their office premises. And it sounds great if I'm working, you know, I'm working hard, I can take a nap. But it's also saying, you know, there's no reason to leave the office. You can effectively sleep here. Why go home? Right. Or if you're going to leave late, we'll pay for your cab, or we'll have someone clean your house. We'll pay for your dry cleaning. These are all things that sound great, but, you know, it's kind of more indicative of a culture and a brand that's saying, yeah, don't go home. We kind of, right, you know, work, work, work.
I think of the book and movie The Circle, with the fictitious Google-esque but more clearly evil company that behaves in the same way, that has the sleep pods and everything else, and right, never leave.
Yep, exactly.
But I also think you talked about some of those things that are either lip service or on the surface. And it just always makes me think of, you know, when someone's culture move is, look, we have a ping pong table. Yes. That seems like the go-to. Look, it is a fun workplace.
Yeah, exactly. We put an arcade machine in the corner, or, right, or, you know, there's a coffee machine. There's a Mr. Coffee there now. So, but it's like, you know, if someone says, if a brand says, we put a coffee machine in there, you know, because they think employees expect that basic perk. But what if an employee wants to linger by that coffee machine for, you know, 2 minutes and ask an employee about their day or their family, or discuss a project that they're working on or a product that they're trying to output? And are they allowed to do that? Or is a manager walking by and, you know, saying, not enough work, guys, or something like that? So it's always, you always have to look at the, you know, that those perks through a lens of a pandering gesture versus something that the brand is genuinely committed to.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the 7 dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics, at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with 2 A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So it seems like there's almost I'm a visual person, so it seems like there's almost something, a cycle, a visual that you could draw from this, because you, even in the examples that you went through there, talking about Clear Left and that being a part of their recruiting strategy, and, you know, the culture clearly communicated at HubSpot, and all of these things, getting the right people, making those people a part of your brand, a part of your culture, that then they in turn are, I mean, happy employees that are doing their job, but then they're also going to start radiating that message outward as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the things I talk about in my book is again, this seems like the most basic thing. When somebody first is joining a brand or joining a company on their first day, when they walk in the door, how are they received? Is it, you know, where you walk in and nobody's expect you're greeted, you walk in and no one's greeting you at the door, or no one has expected you to arrive, or you're thrown, you know, right into training, which, you know, I understand that happens, but you're thrown right into training and no one has, you know, really shaken your hand or taken the time to ask, you know, hi, what's your name? And starting on a Monday is kind of the layup gesture in most industries because there's a momentum implied there that there's 5 days of a business weeks, you know, starting before you. And that is the momentum of 5 consecutive days of doing X. Sometimes you're thrown right into project work. Sometimes you're immediately in meetings. But what I like to do in terms of my own practices and you know, in the interviews I've given before, this is the thing that seems to resonate almost immediately and be adopted, which is encouraging, is have people start on a Friday, because there's a different momentum there. When you're welcoming someone and, you know, you're doing your general first day practices of setting up email and, you know, those kind of things. Effectively, at that point, I take people off site the remainder of the second half of the day. And, you know, we're having lunch, again, a layup gesture. That's fine. And we're talking about family and things like that. And are you from Chicago or are you from, you know, Denver, whatever? And then we go to a coffee shop. And then after that, I'm starting to get this whole notion of pause with intent. So we had lunch. We're not rushing back to the office. We're going to a coffee shop and we're talking about then. When people don't have food in their mouths and you're talking between bites, we're talking about process and we're talking about why the brand that this person has just committed their passion and their work to, how this brand is going to support them, how this brand is going to advocate for them in turn. It's not just like you join this brand, you advocate for us. There has to be a give and take there. It's a two-way street. And then after that, I always ask them after this coffee thing, take me someplace in the city that inspires you. Why do you think the way you do? Beyond your portfolio, beyond your body of work, what inspires you to think and creatively problem solve the way you do? And, you know, we do that and people take me to different places. Sometimes there's a deer in headlights look. Sometimes they have an answer right away. And we stop about 3 o'clock. 3-4 o'clock. And the intent there is to take this momentum, the brand demonstrative in action and not just words. So, you know, I've gone through this whole process at this point on this onboarding day. And people take that energy and take it right into the weekend and they take it right into their friends and family interactions. And people very often go right on social media and they say, this is the best first day experience I've ever had because of this brand or because of this company I've just joined. And again, This is a day one gesture. Of course, longevity is the intent and the goal. But right out of the gate, that organic championing of the brand is something that is such a missed opportunity that so many companies, you know, can take advantage of.
I love that idea of starting on a Friday. That it seems like such a random thing that I don't even know why you would question when someone would start. But it seems like that allows it. It gives that touch point so much more space. As we were talking, I thought about all the different moments, and you talked about onboarding, and that is such a key moment. I think about, you know, the law of primacy, that they're going to remember those first interactions more than everything else. It's going to set the stage for everything else. And a lot of times, by not giving it space, by having it on a Monday, we kind of check all those boxes quickly and now get to work.
Right.
Even if we don't say it like in my faux taskmaster voice there, that's the implication when there's a whole week left there, champ. That I think that it's really valuable to give it that space and to not just check the boxes, but to ask some things that are sort of deliberately out of the box as well.
Right. Right. And I, again, this is the brand in practice. This is the brand, living as an interaction. It's living, through conversation. And if I wasn't passionate about, you know, whatever company or brand I'm associated with, I wouldn't be there at that point. So if I'm not speaking about it passionately and genuinely, you know, it's not my place to be there at that point. So I want to make sure that that genuine passion that I have for the brand I'm associated with at that point is as authentically communicated as possible, because people are, I mean, they're joining you because they're brilliant people and they're passionate about what they do, and that people can sniff. People have good BS detectors ultimately. And if you start with that straight out of the gate, what is it indicative? It's indicative of the brand. It's, you know, I'm the mouthpiece for the brand at that point. I'm the brand ambassador internally communicating the brand poorly. So, you know, the passion and the investment and the commitment, like I said, has to trickle top down. And, you know, just authentic, genuine interactions just kind of bubble up from that.
So you talk about the living brand and this level of insight with people. Do the people then inform, or can they inform, what the brand is?
I think, it's clearly the brand, and, you know, we talked earlier about the brand and the culture being synonymous, and I genuinely believe in that. And if the people who are everyone is a brand stakeholder, but if it's not trickling down from the top and those people are not receptive of the, you know, that trickling back up again, I think there's a big missed opportunity. So like you said, some of the best ideas come from employees at all levels. And this is not even people who are, you know, the best ideas come from marketing or the best ideas come from product. In my experience, some of the, you know, best ideas come from anyone who has insight or anyone who has an objective opinion. This can come from, you know, as someone who's answering the phones, or this can come from, you know, someone who is a part-time worker, or someone who is even a contractor, and they have an outside insight that, you know, we hadn't considered internally. People have those insights, I feel, all the time, but is the brand listening to those, and are they receptive, and are they going to make those actionable items? So across the board, you know, being as humble, I think, and receptive to that feedback and you know, empathetic to other people's viewpoints as possible, that is all indicative of a passionate, supportive brand. When it's not just the top down facilitates, but, you know, bottom back up, that also, you know, helps augment and support things genuinely as well.
Well, and I think too about the message that sends when someone from, you know, not just because I think we see a lot of organizations that have the special department where the ideas come from. I think that's really worth pointing out. And even though I'm sure there's some, you know, many organizations that do have departments that are, you know, over-indexing on ideas just by the nature of, you know, product marketing groups and things of that nature. But I think when they can come from elsewhere, boy, that sends a powerful message to everybody, not just the person answering the phone, the intern that had the idea, but to everyone else that is also in a similar role, that they can be a part of this as well.
Right. And I think as long as those interactions are not like, you know, one-offs because a brand or a company is responding to people saying we're not being heard. So it's like, okay, let's put like a voting box, and whoever, you know, submits the best idea, that'll be something that applies to culture. And, you know, beyond that, you know, the culture, the brand stakeholders at the top levels are not receptive to feedback. This needs to be something that is, you know, as organic as possible. So, and, you know, the door is always open. I'm always approachable. Yes, my title is on an org chart is higher than yours in an org chart, but, you know, we're people, we're talking, we're all respected, and everyone's idea has value. So, you know, that two-way street, again, if a brand is genuinely passionate about that kind of feedback, it needs to be felt on the daily.
Because everyone's idea has value. As we wrap up, I have to ask, Justin, for a brand that has made you smile recently.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because something actually makes me smile quite often. So I am a...
I already asked you for example. This happens every now and then where we talk about what the guest is really focused on. They say example brands, and they've ended up inadvertently using brands that make them smile. But
So I am someone who's very passionate about denim, and I'm kind of what you would call a denim elitist or a denim snob, wow. if I may. So... one of the brands that has made me smile recently, it's kind of a no-nonsense way to communicate. They're called Ironheart, and they are a Japanese denim brand, I want to say founded early 2000s, maybe 2005. And their intent is to make these custom pieces in very limited quantity. You know, when they are posted on the Ironheart website, they go quick. And if you're not watching for it, you know, it's kind of a one-off, and then these things are gone. Their brand mantra is to make garments for bikers primarily, and then that through that lens, it's about quality. The intent of things being exposed to the elements, the things having rigidity, the way, you know, the brand is all about, you know, hands being in there and custom crafting, and the way they're chain stitching the denim and every little aspect. You know, when you read a piece you read the text on a piece they wrote, it's kind of like wine tasting notes, but for denim, the way they write about it. So that, you know, when a piece comes up and it just something happened the other day and, you know, I just took the time, I paused with intent and I read through the description. I was like, this is nice. I'm getting something out. I'm getting a genuine reaction, from what I'm reading. So, that's probably an answer you're never going to get again.
No,
Japanese denim, but
that, and I think that you're the first open denim elitist. We may have had others on the show in all of our guests, but no one has so publicly proclaimed that. So right now you own that mantle.
Ah, beautiful.
On brand podcast guest and denim elitist, Justin Dower. Thank you for joining us. Where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Nick, I am at Pseudoroom, P-S-E-U-D-O, Room, on effectively all social media, Twitter, Instagram, etc. My personal website is also pseudoroom.com. That has my podcast appearances, my book, my speaking appearances, et cetera, et cetera. Those kind of things will give the best example. And then my book, Cultivating a Creative Culture, is the-culturebook.com.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Justin, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it.
And a reminder, if you like something on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of Apple Podcasts and Google, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week. I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.